You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the first Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast on the fifth India-England Test from Dharamshala. I'm Yaz Rana and with me today is Ben Gardner. A grim day for England, having won the toss on what looked like a very good pitch. Crawley and Duckett once more got them off to a good start before the innings unravelled in a depressingly familiar set of circumstances for the visitors. Duckett played a loose shot off the last ball of Kuldeep's first over, which had already gone for nine before Pope was out advancing down the wicket to a googly that he didn't pick on the stroke of lunch. Crawley was done by a Kuldeep beauty on 79 before a Bairstow counter in his 100th test took England to 175 for three. That soon became 175 for six as Kuldeep and Jadeja ran through the England middle order before Ashwin mopped up the tail. Kuldeep finished with five as England collapsed to 218 all out. Rohit and Jaiswal got India off to a flyer of their own as India finished the day on 135 for one. Jaiswal getting a bit overexcited on 57 off Bashir, the only Indian wicket to fall. Ben, there's lots to say about England, but before we get to them, Kuldeep was genuinely outstanding.
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I know that his economy rate ended up being the highest of spinners, but he actually does not bowl very many bad balls for a wrist spinner, and yet he doesn't sacrifice anything in the amount of like rip or action he puts on the ball for that, and he bowls some absolutely magic deliveries. I mean, that ball to Crawley is just, it's just brilliant, because it also beats him in the air a little bit before it turns absolutely massively off the pitch to go through bat and pad, which is why Crawley, you know, sort of coming out, can't hit it on the full, or not on the full, just as it bounces, because he's been done that little bit. He was so good, and you know, in the end, it looks like, you know, him and Ashwin have sort of done the work together, but Kuldeep there, five of the first six to fall, getting those early wickets when you know, England had done pretty well to start with, you know, seeing off that's the swinging spell with the new ball. You're looking at it thinking, like, actually England are kind of in the game here. It's what, 100 for one, 135 for two, and then that's when you want your wrist spinner to have an effect, and then he absolutely did. And he's been, you know, he's been kind of threatening to do this all series, but up to this point hadn't taken four wickets in a game. Or sorry, he'd taken 4 wickets in every game he'd played. A lot of key moments in that, a lot of tight spells, a lot of so he'd really had an effect, but this was sort of the, you know, a crowning moment for him, and also where he made his test debut at the back end of sort of the closest India have come to losing a home test series, and now he's sort of confirming that home dominance again. And maybe, I think, you know, with, you know, Ashwin's playing his 100th test, he's reached 500 wickets. Clearly, he's nearer the end than the start. He's what, he's 37, and people are asking who is going to succeed Ashwin, and it's Kuldeep for me, basically. Like, he is a bowler who can, you know, take wickets when it's not doing loads, but it's doing a little bit, so that a really high class spinner can can have an effect, and he is that. He's a high class spinner, and yet his sort of full arrival at this level is just massive for India.
The comparison I'd make with Kuldeep is actually to Bumrah, in that he's getting England's best players out when the pitch isn't doing that much for the seamers, and when it looks like England are going pretty well. Like, if you go through his wickets one by one, not in order, but Stokes and Pope both don't pick wrong ones. Stokes plays back to one. He's in position to cut it, but it turns sharply into him. Pope comes down the wicket trying to flick it into the leg side for one, but it turns the other way, beats his outside edge, and Jarrell does the rest. And the wickets of Crawley and Bairstow, they basically pitch in exactly the same spot, just outside off stump. They're both very full. As you say, the one to Crawley turns back so sharply. It takes the top of leg stump from a ball delivered from over the wicket from a left-hander pitching outside off stump. Yeah, top of leg stump. The ball pitched in pretty much exactly the same spot for the Bairstow wicket, but sort of slides on with the arm and takes Bairstow's outside edge. And yeah, you're right to point out that Kuldeep made his test debut 7 years ago, pretty much exactly at the same ground. And a clip was doing the rounds on Twitter today of his first test performance. And I found it fascinating how much he has come on as a bowler. Sure, he was very young then, but very few wrist spinners, I can't really think of anyone really, who have managed to put on that much pace, but totally retain the weapons that make them so threatening in the first place. So turn, dip, accuracy is exactly the same, if not better, than it was 7 years ago. But he's doing it all at 5 mph quicker. And Alistair Cook was saying on the TNT Sport coverage that little pace difference does make all the difference, because players can't just react to the turn anymore. They have to make decisions earlier. And he's, as you say, he's threatened to do this series. And I think he's deserved a day like this where he's the main man. It was quite a cute moment at the end where they're walking off the pit field. Ashwin took four and Kuldeep wanted to give Ashwin the ball on his 500th test. And Ashwin was like, no, you have your moment. Nakul Pandey asks, can India get Kuldeep into an overseas 11? One or two spinners? And if so, how?
So it is tricky, because there is an argument that he should be ahead of Ashwin overseas now. I mean, going back to early in Kuldeep's career, when they won that first series in Australia and Kuldeep took 5 wickets in that final test at Sydney, I think, and Shastri says after that he is our number one spinner overseas now, and that didn't sort of, you know,
he's transpire. Played one overseas test since.
Yeah, but there is a real case for that now, but even then that doesn't quite answer the question, because India haven't tended to play Ashwin overseas anyway, unless there's been sort of, you know, a few injuries around or another reason to.
And it's complicated because in overseas test matches, India basically always play one of Ashwin or Shardul at eight for batting cover.
Yeah.
And as well as Kuldeep batted in the fourth test match, he's still not really number eight.
Yeah.
So it's not a light for light swap with Ashwin.
Yeah. So I guess I wonder if the possible return at some point of Rishabh Pant could play into this, because if you have him at number six and then Jadeja at seven, maybe they'll feel that the need for a number eight downwards is lessened. And then you also look at, and this is a different form, but you look at the World Cup and what happened when they lost the all-rounder in that and needed to balance the 11, and they could have sort of replaced him with a much inferior all-rounder, but instead went, no, actually we're going to just back our strength, which is our bowling. And that was when they brought in Shami for Pandya.
Didn't work out that great for them in the end.
Not in the final, that's true, but I think,
but I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. I think they might just look at it and think, like, what is the best way to get 20 wickets? That's the key thing that's going to decide whether we win overseas test matches and series or not. And Kuldeep, I can see being a big part of that.
Mm. I can't think of many, you know, we're making direct comparisons to other wrist spinners, but there aren't many of them. I can't think of many spinners in the world, not just now, but over the last 10 years, who look so threatening in the first innings. Because if you look at Kuldeep's series breakdown, he's got a lot of first innings wickets and a lot of top order first innings wickets even before this test match. He's extremely difficult to counteract when there isn't that much in it for the spinner.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's worth saying on him is that, you know, we talked about how he's improved since his first test match, but it's not been at all linear either. Like, there was a stage when he looked in danger of sort of slipping kind of out of India contention altogether, and there was a time in the IPL where Moeen Ali got hold of him, and that actually seems to have a real effect on him, or it came at least at the point when, you know, he had a real dip in form, having, you know, been irresistible for the early stage of his career. And at that point you're wondering, is the sort of the classic mystery spinner thing, you know, that you don't see many left arm wrist spinners. Had he come on, people couldn't pick him. And then they figured out how to pick him, and then that limits his effectiveness a lot. And he's gone away and come back kind of a better bowler than he ever was before. And yeah, it's kind of showing in all formats, but now in Test cricket as well.
And I also think that he benefited from using his googly sparingly before this Test match. I don't think he'd actually use it that much in the previous three appearances of his in the series. But today, when he used it, quite a few England players actually were really struggling to pick him. English sport fan asks, is this the best ever Test bowling attack in particular conditions, especially when considering the batting that Jadeja and Ashwin add and therefore balance of the side? I think they're probably lacking a world-class second seamer.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
As good as Siraj is, he's not world-class yet.
You add Shami into it, and it just that does improve it slightly, I guess. Mm. And then I guess there's also the question of, as well as Ashwin bowled well today, but he has been a touch off his best in this series thing, and Jadeja probably too as well. I think there was a point earlier in the series when England spinners basically uniformly had better numbers than India spinners, and that was partly because of how the two sides were batting, but that was still true. So I guess you could maybe even say that previous India attacks in these conditions, like I think maybe there was a series against South Africa who were not a bad side at that point, and India just absolutely blew them away kind of on all fronts. Maybe you'd look at that as being the absolute peak for this side in home conditions. And I don't know if even with Kuldeep added into the mix of it quite compares to how good they were then. But yeah, there's a case. But then, you know, there's been lots, you know, the West Indies attack in
that was the one I was gonna
yeah, in conditions with any sort of carry, they'd have been pretty hard to
yeah face. I guess I don't think there would be many spin attacks ever that have complemented each other this well, to have three different types of spinners. They're so different from each other, and for all to be near enough at the top of the game, it's quite something. Rohit asked, between Zach Crawley and Kuldeep Yadav, who do you and Ben think is the most improved cricketer in the past 2 years, or is it someone else entirely, maybe Travis Head?
It's a good question. I don't know. I probably wouldn't put Head in the mix, if only because, like, this kind of makes sense for his career arc as just a player who enters his peak and stuff, and he hadn't, you know, I think the extent to which he'd struggled could probably be overstated. Like, he was averaging 40 for the first little stint of his Test career. He'd done stuff in white ball cricket. Obviously, he's absolutely brilliant now, but I think that that's a pretty standard career arc, and he happens to be in the peak of it at the moment. I would put Crawley a touch ahead of Kuldeep, just because of I know that Crawley had his moments, but actually, like, I think what he's doing is new, whereas Kuldeep had, you know, he took a 6 for and then a 5 for in 2 ODIs in England in 2018. Yeah. So he was, I guess it's tricky, because so Kuldeep was very, very good, probably got a bit worse and has come back better than before. So I guess if you're taking his improvement from his lowest base, possibly, but then Crawley's low base was averaging 10 for a full calendar year, and he's now averaged 50 across two series against the two best sides in the world.
Yeah. So, Alex asked, 2 years ago, what would you have thought if someone told you that 4.5 tests into an England tour of India, Zach Crawley would have more scores of 50 than Pope, Root, Bairstow, Stokes and Folks combined? He has had, I know people will say he's not got that breakthrough 100 on this tour, but he's done really well. And I thought today was significant because this is one for those who didn't wake up at 4 a.m. in the UK. It was doing loads. There was a graphic that came up on the TV coverage that said that the average amount of swing in the first 10 overs was basically triple that of any other opening 10 over spell that we'd seen so far this series. And there's a bit of fortune in there as well. I think Crawley survived on 61, one that would have been out had Indy reviewed it. Mm-hmm. Sarfaraz was adamant that it was out, but no one listened to him. For them to get through that new ball spell from Bumrah and Siraj was actually very, very impressive. And Crawley has been England's most consistent player this series. And that's something that even Brendan McCullum a couple of years ago, the tyre pumping optimist, didn't foresee.
Yeah. And I guess that is what makes it so frustrating how they did collapse, because it was swing particularly early on rather than the seam. And the pitch actually, okay, it's done a fair bit for Kuldeep, and the Indian spinners have found enough to be threatening, but India would expect to score 450 tomorrow. And so England having got through, you know, not the shot of the ball, it had stopped swinging by the time the collapse happened. You know, it was spin that did it, and it didn't, you know. But if you could have told England that, you know, Bumrah wouldn't take a wicket in their first innings, it had taken that as well. So, yeah, it is crazy. And also Crawley, I think he deserves, because it's, you know, I guess there's a lot of things really in it that deserve credit. What one is for challenging himself to be better, for not accepting that. Because there have been times where it's looked like that on my day, I'll be really good thing. And that he would have sort of, you know, just believed that and therefore not really worried about, you know, the low scores or nicking off or throwing his bat at one and edging it to slip or whatever. And actually to think, no, you know what? I actually really would like to just be able to make scores in all conditions all the time. And I kind of think the big scores, just, I think they just will come basically. The ball today was so good and that will happen. And as openers, actually, I think it's, there have been examples of other openers who have been very, very good, and it is just because they have to graft so hard that they end up getting those scores between 50 and 80. I was actually looking, he's been out between 50 and 80 four times a series. The only guy who's done that more is Chris Rogers, who's another sort of opener, but him in the old school mode. Crawley's kind of maybe gone a bit more old school. I'd be interested to see what his strike rate is. Kampardi's still striking, 70 this series, but whether his strike rate has dipped since the start of the Ashes, I'm not sure, or if it's based on the same
higher
level.
It's higher. Really? Okay. Yeah, it's higher. I think he's just got a clearer method than he had before. Was previously, before this now, it's a 10 match run, two series in a row against the best two teams in the world, where he's got more than 400 runs in a series. I think before this run, he'd quite often bunker down and almost do like an impression of what he thought an opening batter ought to be like, whereas now he's stayed true to what he's good at. And that still involves withstanding periods of really good bowling and knuckling down and getting through them.
But he's chosen to attack really well.
Exactly. Also, there'll be people who listen to our preview and then seen that 10 wickets have fallen to spin, wondering what are we on about? Ben Stokes said before the game that they were planning on picking three seamers based on the temperature, the altitude, the previous record on that ground, etc. But then they basically turned up, looked at how beige the pitch was, and was like, this looks like it's going to play similar to what we've seen so far. And he was probably right with that assessment. And so Rohit, stuck with the same balance of side. More negatively on England, the familiarity of that collapse, I think, was quite hard to swallow for a lot of England fans. You can always sort of tell how a day has gone by the influx of questions. And normally when there's lots of questions, it's not gone so well for England. And yeah, if you go through it, it's another 50-run opening stand, the fifth of the series for Crawley and Duckett. Then it's a loose-ish shot that gives India an opening. Pope doesn't get through a frenetic start. Crawley doesn't convert his 50 into 100. Root is undone by a brilliant piece of bowling. Bairstow's counter ends before it gets going. Stokes doesn't get going at all. And then Folks struggles initially in this case with the tail. Jamie asks, is today A, mental fatigue from a long tour that not even the Bazball Hakuna Matata approach can avoid? Is it B, four tests worth of working batters out? C, indicative of a problem in England's middle order? Or D, none or all of the above?
I guess most of all B, I would say, with a little bit of C. The trick with A is that, as you say, it has just been the same old story, hasn't it? So you can't be, you know, that this is like, it's not mental fatigue if it's happened from kind of sort of from test one. I think there has been an element of England being worked out, or at least India knowing, like, you know, I don't know if Bairstow has been worked out exactly, but they know that they aren't going to have to wait too long until they get a chance with him, just because it doesn't seem like he trusts his defence too much at the moment. And it still felt today, you know, like the quality of his stroke play was brilliant, but it just, he didn't, like, it's just never been for long enough, basically. And then C, is it a problem with England's middle order? I mean, that's the key reason why England have lost the series, is just their middle order hasn't fired, those three averaging all less than 30. Whether that's a problem that will extend beyond the series, or whether this is just, you know, a thing that happens in India, probably more the latter, especially, I guess, Harry Brook will come back in, England will have a decision to make over the gloves, and I guess that will depend a bit on, you know, county form as well. I think there should be a chance for, you know, a county wicketkeeper to put a run of form together and put their hand up. But then once you add, once you know, you take out the bowling attack of this quality and you add Brook back into it, then, you know, that it just looks a bit more solid there. I suppose Stokes, his series is like Root, there's its own story there, you know, with the reverse scoop and the grappling with England's approach, and then the brilliant 100
and a great bit of bowling from Jadeja today. It's worth saying that it's one of those dismissals that you need to see the ball before to appreciate how good it was. Jadeja bowled two balls in exactly the same spot, one ragged, Miles misses Root's outside edge, the next ball goes straight on with the arm, probably a bit of natural variation rather than an arm ball. That's what Swan thought on commentary at least, and Root was done by that. But yeah, you were saying, sorry, that Stokes has had quietly actually a very poor series with the bat.
Yeah, and especially after starting it so well with that first innings of the series. And, you know, and he hasn't been Ashwind. It would be like more understandable if that was the case. But he's just, you know, he's got out to lots of different types of bowlers in a few different ways. And the dismissal today, it was, you know, you look at the shot and you're trying to work out what is he trying to do there. It's sort of like a back foot kind of whip that's going to get him maybe a single, but it's a pretty ambitious stroke to play, but it's almost more a technical thing. And it seems to you either doesn't get forward enough to spin or he gets sort of trapped going back when he should be forward. And it's, I mean, you know, hopefully he'll be back bowling this summer and then maybe that lessens the pressure if there is any that he feels on his batting and that frees him up possibly, but you need your number six to be doing more than he's done in this series. And you wrote a piece in this before the series a little bit, as it has been over the course of his captaincy as a whole, you know, because his average now will be, you know, a fair bit like what, about 35 as captain compared to what, 36 and a half before.
And in the first innings, it's more start than that. He basically averaged 31 as captain in the first innings.
Yeah, and that's where England's problems have been, as we've seen today, I guess.
Briefly, the Duckett shot on paper, at least the one that you I can understand why people may be most frustrated by, but you made a good point in that actually we've pointed out that Duckett would probably reflect on some of the dismissals this series and actually be annoyed that he's got out defending so often. So at least he was trying to do something that has actually brought him a lot of success.
Yeah, and also if that does come off, and it's, you know, it's not a million miles from coming off. You know, he gets a sort of half a chunk of it, and he's a good enough player that he could sometimes middle that shot, and it comes with the most reward because he's trying to hit it for six. And Kuldeep at that point, I guess the other thing is Kuldeep had gone for nine in his first over at that point, and all of a sudden it's, you know, one for nine rather than, and but trying to make that like 15 in the first over, that would be a lot of runs. And you know, if England had got on top of Kuldeep at that point, you know, imagine a different scenario where, you know, Duckett gets hold of that ball and then the next over England tick it around, maybe get a loose ball they put away, and all of a sudden Kuldeep, you know, 23 off two overs and is kind of struggling to get into the game at that point. Like that, those kind of calculations are what England are trying to do when they're attacking. It probably was still the wrong shot, but I can see why you would want to totally get on top. You know, it's quite Brendan McCullum, isn't it? It frustrates him that if he sees a bat hit a six and then hit a single, because he says you've missed the opportunity to win a game at that point. I think he was really sensitive about T20 cricket, but I can see how, you know, you've missed the opportunity to win the battle, at least with a bowler at that point. And that's what Duckett was trying to do. And he lost it and India won it because they're so good.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting comparing the two sides. I think that obviously India have outplayed England, but I think they've also outthought England as well, because if you look across the series now, England won the test in conditions that were closest to what they expected to come across in the series. The last four pitches have generally been flatter. I know there was a bit of inconsistent bounce throughout the fourth test match, but generally the last four pitches have been better for batting throughout the test match. Obviously we don't know how this pitch will go, but given the temperatures, it's unlikely to crumble apart. And to win test matches in these conditions, you need to get 450, 500. And it seems to me that while you can justify the thought behind some of the decisions that have led to players' downfalls, I do also think that the risk reward's not there for when you're trying to score 450 on a flat one compared to race to 300 on one that's turning loads. So for example, Pope coming down last over before lunch when you're not reading Kuldeep. Where's the reward there? That Duckett one, I understand what he's trying to do, but at the same time, you know, quick fire 40s aren't going to win you this test match. They, you know, you've got through the new ball period, which in theory at that point of the game looked like will be the most difficult period to bat at least on day one or two. So it feels like England are giving away opportunities too easily. There's another element of it is that this India attack is so good that even if Bumrah has an off day, someone like Kuldeep or Ashwin's going to have a brilliant day. So someone's always going to get you. There's that nagging sense of that. But it does feel that India have sort of... And I think also, even if you go to the opening partnership, yeah, they put on 50, but they did it slower than they've generally done. And I think Rohit has been quicker at just dropping men back and cutting down the boundary options. So, yeah. The familiarity, I think, speaks of not enough of an effort to try and do things differently when it wasn't really working.
Yeah, and maybe it goes back to that first test in Pakistan, and that's made them think that they can make, you know, massive scores playing this way because they did it then. But the, you know, that was flatter than this was. It was also because it was so flat, you had the extra sort of motivation of needing to inject time back into the game. You didn't need to do that here. I think it'd be pretty unlikely for any of these, as you know, as fair as the pitches have been, for any of these pitches to, you know, be, you know, dull draws on the fifth day. And also that bowling attack was just so much inferior to what we've had, that they like, yeah, and just not back completely normally, but you don't need to get funky when you think you're slightly nose ahead in the game because wickets are just so valuable, and India have, I guess, at times, especially Jaiswal, has shown that.
Well, that's it for part one. In part two, we'll talk about Ollie Pope and the start of the India innings. Weird series for Pope, Ben. 196 in the second innings at Hyderabad, 100 runs in the eight innings either side of that. What have you made of it?
I mean, I guess basically exactly that. I guess with the caveat that, the you know, as brilliant as that Hyderabad 100 was, you know, it wasn't a million miles away from falling to the same camp. It was still a, you know, a scratchy start, and Pope is a scratchy starter, which doesn't have to be terminal for a test cricketer. There have been loads who, you know, the feeling about Ricky Ponting was that you might be able to get him early, and I don't know whether that was wishful thinking because you definitely weren't, you definitely weren't getting
get
him late.
Later on.
But you know, that doesn't have to be, you know, it's always, for every test cricketer there's ever been, it's harder to bat at the start of your innings. The frustrating thing, I suppose, is that Pope still seems to just want to kind of blast his way through that, rather than kind of, if you were to think like, okay, let's just, you know, take the runs that are on offer for the first 20 balls, or not even put a time limit, so just until I feel that, because it does just get easier. That's the thing that just somehow is true for every player as well, even if they're still bowling as well. You know, a little bit of the you know, the spice will be taken out of it, and it does just get easier, even though it can feel impossible when you start. And it's just frustrating that it's, yeah, just felt like, and also maybe he's just gone too early when he's felt like he's in, and he's just not given it just that little bit, just make sure my eye's in before going for it. I don't know, but it's it's been frustrating for sure.
It sort of feels like if the first stage of England under Bazball was sort of characterized by shattering convention, being daring, freeing players up, it sort of feels, you know, it's 14, 15 months since they won a series now. Because as you point out, that you can't call one-off test series, because no one says that Shawshank Redemption is their favourite film series of all time. And, you know, there's a very interesting interview that Pope gave to Joe in the magazine after the 2022 summer, where Joe brought up the whole frenetic start thing. And Pope said, the frenetic thing I've never really got, because I'm also frenetic when I score my hundreds. I'm always looking to get down the other end early in my innings because that's what works well for me. It's a positive, but it can look a little bit negative on the bad days. Suppose what you'd say is, and this is what I'm saying about like England potentially being a bit stubborn in the last year or so. What I'd say to Pope there is, well, he has a lot of bad days. I did a sort of a statsy thing on Pope today. Over the last 5 years, he fails to get to 25 65% of the time. And of all England top seven batters who've played 10 or so tests in that time, that is the highest percentage on that list. Against Australia and India, who he has a very poor record against, he averages 22 against them over 17 or so test matches. He averages 22. He's got past 45 twice in 34 innings against Australia and India. He is a bad starter, and it doesn't seem that there's much that's changing, and he's clearly capable of doing better than that. And I feel like the next step for this England side is sort of acknowledging where they could be better with the bat. I actually think with the ball, they've had a pretty good series with the bowlers they've got. How inexperienced they are, they managed to keep India just well aside relatively quiet, actually, and have had moments in every single game. But it does feel like with the bat, there isn't enough space for... It doesn't seem that they can... They're almost acknowledging that there's room for improvement when there clearly is.
Yeah, and you know, in some ways, this is just the story of all kind of test cricket coaching in particular, kind of almost throughout history, especially English cricket history, where and captaincy as well, where you have, you know, the disciplinarians and the guys who sort of free you up. You know, it's Hussain to Vaughan. It's, you know, it's you know, like this is kind of the story. And the, but then the challenge is, and this also, you see this actually more broadly across sports, is can you have a coach and a leadership team who can instill two different ideas, or when something stops working, go to something else. And that's kind of where, you know, the great coaches separate themselves from the rest. And that is kind of the challenge for England now. Can they just inject that little bit of discipline that can take them from a good side? And, you know, we shouldn't neglect that they have obviously made progress under Stokes and McCullum, to take them from a good side to a side that is, you know, one of the best in the world. Well, I guess they are one of the best in the world, because there's not that many test cricket teams, but the best in the world, I suppose, which I think they do have the potential to do still.
I think if they won the second test match in this series, they would have gone to number one in the world.
Yeah.
So they weren't far off.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they if we want to talk about it quickly, I mean, they if they can start smashing sides at home, which they have the potential to do, like the weaker sides, that's been one of the things that's been holding them back from being the best in the world. And they're already pretty good away from home, but they have the tools to maybe... Like, it's still not impossible. They challenge in Australia the winter after next. And if they do that, they'll have a claim to that. But to do that, it is going to be that ruthlessness, that getting ahead in games and staying ahead. And to do that, it is, that feels more of an issue on the batting side. And that will just need these guys who have done very good things at times under Stokes and McCullum to look to the example of Zach Crawley, really, and think, like, what do I need to take my game to the next level to be, you know, a player who is properly world class, rather than someone who's just having good days but maybe not improving as I would like to be, I suppose.
Someone who looks properly world class is Yashasvi Jayaswal. He had a lot of fun today. I know he got out for 57, but you know, he hit Bashir's first over for 18 with three sixes.
The second one
was mad. Again, sort of against the turn, inside out over extra cover for six.
Not that full.
Just... Yeah, not that full. Didn't get to the pitch of the ball. I suppose he actually tried a similar shot, the ball he got out.
I think that's the biggest his biceps have ever looked right after he hit that shot. That's the first one. I was like, okay, this guy, he's sort of sinewy, but he has some muscle about him as well.
He's very strong. He's got quite broad shoulders, and his sixes do go absolutely miles. But yeah, in India, looked fine. England didn't really create many chances. Anderson, four overs, none for four. He looked good, but not that threatening. Wood, three overs for 21.
Wood was rapid, it's worth saying. But
94 mile per hour bouncer was hit for six off Rohit, as you do. Hartley bowled some very good balls, but I don't think created consistent enough pressure to cause serious problems, and Bashir was quite similar. So yeah, I guess England's route into the game is, you still say it is an inexperienced middle order. You've got Padikkal on debut. Safraz has had one very good test, one not great test.
India are 135 for one, England were 135 for two, you know. All it needs is a collapse of 3 for naught where they burn on their reviews and back in the game.
That's a crucial point we didn't mention. In that collapse of 8 for 5, there was a 13 ball period where England didn't score a run. Their three most senior players got out, and all three of them burnt reviews as well.
Yeah.
They sort of summed it all up. Ben, final word for the DJ.
Oh yeah, it was really fun. But just also, you know, basically choosing whatever they liked, essentially. My ears most perked up when it was the theme tune from Friends for some reason, like, and you know, I think this might be the first time I'd heard that all the way through and not just the bit that they use for the for the actual TV show. It was a lot of fun, and there's a massive traveling support out there, and at least they might have had a good time because of that, if not because of watching the cricket itself.
So, yeah, 100%. There was a bit of Bill Withers 45 minutes into play, ABBA first couple of hours, so really, really went through the genres. Anyway, that is it for today. Cheers, Ben. Cheers for listening. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow.
Sports Social Podcast Network.